We begin the current daf, Masechta Ksubos, daf Pei Zayin. We begin on the bottom of Pei Vav Mabez, the bottom line on the Yomid. The Gemara begins to explain the Mishnah on the previous daf. And that is, the Mishnah said that if a husband writes to his wife that Neder Ushvua Ein Li Alayich, that if I don't have any rights to make you take an oath or a vow, then he has no rights. And the Mishnah went through different computations about how to avoid that with his Yerushim and her Yerushim and all the different parties involved to make sure that she doesn't have to swear. Now on that, the Gemara asks, Shvua mai avidita, regarding what oath is there generally that a woman is obligated to swear to her husband or to his inheritors, that our Mishnah is coming to say that when he doesn't exempt her, that she would be obligated, and that what the Mishnah says, that when he exempts her, then she doesn't have to make the Shvua. As the Mishnah is saying, if he tells her that Nedru Shvua Ein Li Alayich, fine, then you don't have to. But it sounds like that there is a Shvua that she generally would be obligated to make for the husband. What is that in reference to? So on that, the Gemara brings the Amrav Yehuda Amrav, as we continue on top of Pei Zayin Menal. He says, it's Ala Petropia Shenasis Bechai Baila. It's regarding a woman that became an administrator over the husband's business dealings when the husband was alive. And that is, when he writes to her that Neder Shvua Ein Li Alayich, I'm not going to make you take an oath, it's regarding the Shvuas Apotropos, which is a general, generic oath that any administrator has to make. And if he makes her into a storekeeper, as we learned this topic on the previous stuff, then there's a Shvua of Apotropos, which even the Tanakhama agrees to. On that, our Mishnah continues that theme and says, but if he says Neder Shvua Ein Li Alayich, then she doesn't have to make that Shvua of the Shvuas Apotropos. However, what's obviously missing from what Rabbi Yehuda Merav is explaining, if let's say, as the coming Mishnah will describe this halacha of what's called pegemis ksubasa, when the woman creates a deficiency in her ksuba, as the coming Mishnah says that if she's pegemis in her ksuba, then she could only collect with a shvua, on that Rabbi Yehuda Merav is saying that when the husband says nedu shvua ein li alayich, it was not in reference to that shvua, because when he's exempting her from a shvua, he's only exempting her from a shvua that he's imposing on her, which is when he makes her into an apotropos, and he has the right to make a shvua. On that, he's saying that he's exempting her. But an oath that she is causing to herself when she's pegemis in her ksuba, meaning when she goes and she claims that she only got half and not the whole ksuba, that he didn't exempt her from. That's something that she caused herself by being pegemis in her ksuba, as we'll see in the coming Mishnah, what exactly does that mean and how does she do that. But that type of oath he's not exempting her from, and therefore when he says Neder Shvua Ein Li Alayich, it's not going on that. It's only Ein Li Alayich, that what I have on you, which is when that's regarding the Shvua of an apotropos, when the wife is an administrator in the husband's work. That's Rabbi Yehuda Merav. Rabbi Nachman Amar Rav Bar Avuah, he says that no, Ala Pegemis Ksubasa, that this exemption of Neder Shvua is even regarding a woman that's pegemis in her ksuba, and for sure, when he has the right of a Shvus Apotropos, that for sure there, obviously, that's Ein Li Alayich, that he's going to exempt her from that. And the reason is because he exempts her from all Shvus, not only a Shvus Apotropos, like Rabbi Yehuda Merav said, but Rav Nachman said, even on when she's Pegemis Ksubasa, he's exempting her from all rights of a Neder and Shvua. Now, also Rav Mordechai went, and Amar L'Shmaita, he said the following question that the Gemara is going to quote right now. He said it Kameid Rav Ashi. And his question was as follows. Bishlam Ilaman Da'ama ala Pegemis Ksubasa. We could understand Rav Nachman's opinion, he says, that the oath that he's exempting her from is regarding when she's Pegim her Ksuba, which the coming Mishnah says generally she has to make a Shvuah to collect what she claims is the rest of her Ksuba that's Otar. And on that, is we can understand that that's what he's saying, that's what it's quoted in our previous Mishnah, on the previous daf, that if he says that, okay, Neder Shvua Ein Li Alayich, don't worry, I'm not going to make you make an oath, and it's in reference to that, which obviously would also include Shvuas Apotropos. Now, the reason why that makes sense is because Damaska Daita is because the woman entertains that possibility, and she thinks to herself as follows, she's getting married now, she thinks, Dilma Metzucha Li Zuzi, maybe what's going to happen is that I'm going to need money. Now, v'shakilma miksuba soy, and I'm not going to want to collect all my ksuba, but I'm going to be desperate, so I'm going to take some of it from my ksuba. Now, if I'm going to take some of it from my ksuba, what's going to happen is, I'm going to be a pegemis ksubasa, Because then when I'm going to come to collect the rest, and they're going to say, oh, we paid already. I'm going to say, no, you only pay half of it, only part of it. Then, as the coming Mishnah tells us, a pegemis kizubasa is required to make a shvua. So therefore, va'amrelei, she tells him when they get married, kasuvli deloy mishabasli, write for me that I'm not going to have to make a shvua. And because that makes sense that a woman should entertain that, because she knows this halacha of a pegemis kizubasa. And as Rashi explains, that once she's entertaining, that she knows possibly she's going to have to make a shvua one day as a pegemis ksubasa, so then she already says, okay, exempt me from all oaths, which will include even if, let's say, she becomes an administrator. But according to the interpretation of Yehuda Merav, that when the husband tells the wife, neder shvuei nelech, don't worry, I'm not going to make you make an oath or a vow, it's only in regards to when she becomes an administrator, but he's not exempting her from when she's pegemis ksubasa. But the question is, ihi mihavis yada de maisav la petrapa, when she's getting married, she knows that one day the husband's going to take her into the business and make her an administrator? De amrli, that she tells him when they're getting married, kasuvli de le mishavisli, write to me that you're not going to make me take an oath as an administrator? Now, Tysus points an obvious question, and that is, you could say that according to the interpretation of Yehuda Merav, that the Mishnah is talking about when she's already administrated. It's talking about when she's already married. And that's why she's telling her husband to exempt her from having to make the oath of the administrator. And that Taisa says, because why should we say that? Why would Rabbi Yehuda Merav have to give this interpretation in a contrived situation that the whole Shavuah is only as a Shavuah's apotropis? And to say that the Mishnah is talking about only when she's married already, because as Taisa says, generally these types of conditions where the wife presses the husband for certain things is when they're getting married. And when they're getting married, so they make these prenuptials saying, look, I don't want this to be like this. So if we're getting married, I want it to be set like that. So that makes sense. But to say that it's talking about only b'shuas apotropis and it's only talking about when she's already administrator, that's difficult. And therefore the question is, according to Reed Merav, It more likely it's tomorrow when they're getting married. And if that's the case, why would she be entertaining such an option that she's pressing her husband that he's saying, oh, don't worry, neder shvuei nelech. So amalei. So Rav Ashi responded to Rav Mordechai. He says, atun aho masnitala. You see, the reason why you have this question is because you learned this amarok statement of Rav Yehuda going on the resha of the Mishnah, because the resha of the Mishnah didn't specify what shvua and neder is it that the husband is exempting his wife when he says, oh, don't worry, neder shvua ain li alayich. And you learned that Rabbi Yehuda was arguing on the interpretation of Rav Nachman. And we're on the one hand, Rav Nachman said that the shvua that he's exempting her from is even by pegemis ksubasa. You learned Rabbi Yehuda's sentence of ala betrapish anasin b'chayi bala was coming to argue on that and saying that no, the shvua that he's exempting her from is only regarding the halachas of abetrapis. Now, therefore, you had a question that, what do you mean? Why should she entertain that to say that that's what he's exempting her from, only as an administrator? Now, but on that, Rav Ashi answered him. He says, "Ano aha." But we learn that it's going on actually the safe of the Mishnah was masninin law. That is, on regards to where the Mishnah is talking about, it's explicitly talking about the end of the Mishnah regarding a shvuas apotropis. And that is what Rabbi Yehuda Merav was coming to explain the safe of the Mishnah, not the resha. The Sefer of the Mishnah said as follows. Halcha mekever bai lebeis avi. It was talking about a woman that the husband exempted from neder shvuah. So it says that after he was buried, she went straight from the cemetery to her father's household. Oy shachaz lebeis chamel, or even if she went back to her father-in-law's household. But v'loy nasa betrabet, she did not become an administrator. So then the Mishnah said, "Ena yirsh mashbin." So then the inheritors cannot make her swear, because what was when the husband was alive, he already exempted her. And what was after he died, which is now it's not his nechasa, but rather it's nechsi yisaimim, they can't make her swear because she wasn't an administrator, so there's no reason to suspect her that she took anything for herself. Then the Mishnah said, "Vim nasis abetrapia," but if she did become an administrator, because now her husband was not alive, and who's going to take care of the family business, she became the administrator, then yershin mashbinois ala asad lavis. Then the inheritors, the orphans, can make the mother swear regarding the future, because now it's not something that he exempted her from, because the husband only exempted when he was alive, but not regarding nechsi yisaimim. But however, he cannot, the orphans cannot make her swear regarding what was. Now that the question was, Sh'aver maya vidite. What was, what does it have to do? In other words, that until how far back is it considered what was, that we say that it was not considered yet the nechasim of the yesoimim, the properties of the orphans, and that his condition doesn't help. Where does that end? That he said, look, neder shvu'in l'laich, my stuff, you don't have to ever make an oath. But when he's dead, it's not his stuff, it's the orphan stuff. So the orphans, when she's apotropis after his death, would have to make her swear. How far back does that go? Now, on that, Rav Ashi says, regarding the save of the Mishnah, is what Amar Yehuda Merav was saying. On that, he said, and here the key words are not anymore al-apotropia, as we had entertained in the beginning of the Gemara, that was going to Reisha, but of course we're talking about apotropia. We're just asking, regarding this woman that became apotropia, how far back is the past that they don't make her make a shvu on? And that, Rav Yehuda Merav says, al-apotropia she'nasis b'chaya bal, regarding her being an administrator, which was when the husband was still alive. That's the past that they can't make her swear. But the inference is, Aval bein misa likvura mashbin la. But what was between the death and the burial, so that we only spoke about after the burial, she goes to the father-in-law's house. That they can make her swear. But what's between the death and the burial? That is what Yehuda Merav was explaining, that you see from the Mishnah, is mashbin la, that we would make her swear. And the reason is because then automatically the moment he dies, even before he's buried, it's already the estate of the orphans. And therefore his condition doesn't help anymore, because it's not through his being his properties that it came to her. And therefore whatever happened at that time that she spent money on, they could make her swear that she didn't embezzle anything or misuse it and take it for herself. So essentially, according to Rav Ashi, Rav Nachman has nothing to do with what Rav Yehuda said. Rav Nachman was going on the Reisha of the Mishnah, and Rav Yehuda was going on the Seif of the Mishnah. Now, therefore, everyone would agree to Rav Nachman's halacha that regarding when he says Neder Shvu'in Leilayich, it's even on Pagimus Ksubasa. And that's like the Gemara had explained, which Rav Mordechai was asking. That we understand the woman would entertain when she's getting married, because she knows when she's going to want to collect. She might need to take it piece by piece, and then she's going to have to make a Shavuot on the rest, so she wants to get out of it. But regarding an administrator, of course she wouldn't entertain that. That was going on the save of the Mishnah where the prime words were, B'chayi Bala. That is where we said that's the past that she's exempt, to exclude between the death and the burial that she would have to make a Shavuot. Now, however, Rav Masna says, he's actually arguing now on the new interpretation of Rav Ashi, that Rav Yehuda Merav is going on the Seifa of the Mishnah. He argues on Rav Yehuda on the Seifa regarding what did we qualify her as an apotropis of the past that she's going to be exempt from a Shavuot. Now, however, again, as we said, even Rav Masna would agree that, however, regarding the concept of pagemes, everyone would agree to Rav Nachman that she's exempt, because that would be a shvua that was bought through his nechasim. So Rav Masna, he says, no, he argues, and he says, afilu bein misa likvura l'mishbin la, he says that what's considered in the past, that the orphans cannot make her make an oath, even if she later becomes, after her husband's death, as an administrator, between the death and the burial, they don't make her take an oath. And the reason is, for a specific reason. Dami Nardoi, like the Nardoi said, L'charga, for the head tax, which is that the taxes that they have to pay to the government, U'l'mezayne, and for the sustenance of the woman and the daughters and the orphans, U'l'kvura, or for the burial of the husband that died, or for the orphans, Mizavninan, then they could sell from the properties of the orphans, B'loy acharazasa, without making an announcement. In other words, generally, when it comes to selling from the properties of the orphans, although there's a right for it, but we want to make sure we get the most amount of money. So they have to make an announcement beforehand so that people know about it and that they can get the most. But in these type of situations where there's no time to wait because of the taxes or because of sustenance or because of burial, so then they're allowed to do it without making an announcement. And therefore, Rav Masna says the same thing would apply over here, that we don't make her take an oath regarding what she sold between the time of when her husband died and when the burial was, because it's not possible that in the hastiness of the moment that she didn't misuse or misappropriate some of the funds, and if she's going to take an oath, it's going to be shvur sheker, and that's why he argues and he says going backwards is not like just like Rav Yehuda Merav said that when he was alive, but even after he died up until the burial. Now, related to the topic of our Mishnah, the Gemara brings that Amar Rabba Amar Pchia. He says, if the husband wrote these following terms. I mean, in other words, we said in the Mishnah this concept of neder shvu ein li laich. So he brings the following different phraseologies. Let's say he wrote deloy neder u deloy shvu. I'm not going to make you take a neder or a shvu. So who ein li yachal ashbia? He cannot make her make an oath. Avol yershin mashbia noisa. But his inheritors can make her take an oath, because he just said he's not going to, but his inheritors can make her. Let's say he said naki neder naki shvua, that you're cleansed from a neder or from a shvua, then beinhu ubein yoshnein mashbinasa. Then neither him nor his inheritors can make her make a shvua when she's coming to collect the rest of the remainder of the ksuba, which is the halach of begemis ksubasa, because hachekamala. This is what he means to say when he says the word naki is menakis mishvuasa. You're totally cleansed. You're absolved from the whole halacha of shvua, and therefore that would include even his yershin. Whereas Rabbi Yosef Amar Reb Chiya, he has a different version in Reb Chiya. He says deloy neder u deloy shvua, as he said before, hu ein yochel ashbi, he cannot make her take the oath. Aval yershin mashbi nice, but the inheritors could. However, regarding the other halacha of naki neder naki shvua, he actually holds the opposite. He holds bein hu bein yershin mashbi nice, that both him and his inheritors could make her take an oath, because hachikamala, this is what he's telling her, is naki nafshach b'shvuasa. If they suspect you, then you could cleanse yourself by taking an oath. So in other words, to say that you could cleanse yourself, but it's through an oath, and therefore he could make her make an oath. Shalach Reb Zake l'marukva. Reb Zake sent to Marukva the following halacha. He says, bein deloy shvua, bein denaki shvua, regarding either one of these terminologies, of whether loy shvua or naki shvua, or bein deloy nader, or bein denaki nader, or the same thing applies to nedarim. If he wrote that benichsai, that you don't naki neder naki shvua loy neder loy shvua in my properties, so who ein yachal ashbia? So then this is what he held was the qualifying factor. Then he cannot make her make an oath, because he says in my properties avo yershin mashbinaisa. But his inheritors could make her take an oath, because that's not anymore nichsai. It's not his; it's theirs. However, minichsai ilein. But if he said from these properties that if you're coming to collect the rest of your ksuba, that loy neder loy shvua or naki neder naki shvua, then bein hu bein yershin bein mashbinas. Then none of them could, because it's the same properties, and hence that would apply even to the yershin. Continuing along, Amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, he says Mishum Abishol ben Ibn Miriam. He says again, bein deloy shvua bein denaki shvua bein deloy nader u bein denaki nader. And moreover, he adds on to the previous statements. And bein minichsai u bein minichsai ilayin, whether it's from my properties or whether it's from these properties. Bein hu u bein yoshev in mashbinas. He holds in all situations. If he says you don't have to make a neder shvua, it applies both to him and to his inheritors. That's what he holds the halacha is. But he gave a disclaimer. He says, aval me'esa, but what should I do? And the reason is because yershim, the inheritors, the orphans, always mandate an oath if the father dies and people are coming to collect, because the sages said, whoever's coming to collect from the estate of the orphans, we can only collect with an oath. So although the halacha really should be based on what he said, should exempt her both from him and his orphans, but the halacha always is a chacham mandate a shvua when you're collecting from the orphans. Now the Ikud Amrila, that those that learned this statement of Abishol ben Imam Miriam, actually was a masnita, was a braisa. Not like the first version that had it like an amarog statement, where it was Shmuel saying in the name of Abishol, but rather it's a braisa. And that after the braisa, Shmuel said, the halacha is like that braisa of Abishol. And that is, that the braisa says, Abishol ben Imam Miriam Amar, he said this, what we just quoted before, bein deloy shvua, bein denaki shvua, bein deloy nader, bein naki nader, bein minichsei, bein minichsei ilein. Bein hu bein yershev ein mashbinah, so that neither one of them can make her make an oath. Aval me'asa, but again the disclaimer was, so what should I do? Shair amei chacham haboli par menichsi sem li par al b'shvua. And on that, braisa was Amar of Nachman, Amar Shmuel, halacha ben Imam Miriam, the halacha is like Abishol ben Imam Miriam, who said this halacha, that really the halacha should be none of them should be able to, but ultimately, when you're collecting from the yisayim, you always have to make a shvua. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, continuing on the theme of the previous Mishnah about when a woman, regarding the oaths of a woman, when a woman has, regarding a shvu of a woman. So the Mishnah says, as we referenced this before, Hapegemes ksubasa, when a woman makes her ksuba deficient, which as the Mishnah itself later on will explain what that means. So then loitifra, she cannot collect the rest of her ksuba, elabishvu, only with an oath, and the Gemara will explain the reason for this. Moreover, related halacha, eid echad me'idashi prua. Let's say one witness testifies that he saw that the husband already paid up the whole ksuba. So then, if she's coming to collect her ksuba, leitifra elabishvu, she could only collect it by taking an oath that it wasn't collected yet. And the Gemara will explain the reason for that halacha too. Now, let's say she's collecting menichsi yisaimim. Let's say her husband's dead already, and she's collecting from the estate of the orphans. Or umelechasim mishabodim. Let's say her husband has no money, and she's coming to collect the ksuba. So she goes to encumbered properties, many of those which were owned by the husband at the time the ksuba was written, but were later sold off, which she could collect from them. Or vishalei befanav. Let's say she's collecting from the husband, but he's not around, he's out of town. So then, loitipare elibishvur, regarding all these three cases, she could only collect by taking an oath for us that she never collected it yet. Now, the reason for this is as follows. Is because if, she, for example, a classic case of nechasim, of when there's a lender and there's a borrower, and the lender's coming to collect from the borrower. So if a lender would be collecting from a borrower, which in this case essentially is the wife and the husband, that the husband owes the wife. So if a lender's collecting from a borrower, and the borrower would claim I paid you up, and therefore swear to me that I didn't pay you up. So the Gemara Masechta Shavuos says that the lender has to swear. Now, however, if the borrower doesn't make such a claim, so obviously we won't say the claim for him. The reason being is because obviously we should believe the lender because he has a document showing that he gave this loan. However, regarding purchasers that purchased from the borrower, who when the borrower defaults, he doesn't have what to pay to the lender could go to the lekuches, then it's what's called in halachic literature anan taninan. We make the claim for the purchases. And the reason is because if you would go to the borrower himself, if he would make a claim that you should swear to me that I didn't pay you, you would have to make an oath. And therefore, what Chazal say is that we make the claim for the purchases themselves based on the pasuk of Pasach Pricha La'olam Hu, because we open up the mouth for the mute, they don't have what to say. They don't know any better. They didn't borrow the money to say if it's paid up or not. But Chazal, the sages, they do it for them because we see there's a precedent in this context itself that the borrower could have made the oath, it could have made the lender make an oath, so the Chacham mandated for the Lekuchas by default. And that's why we're saying that when she's coming to collect from the Chasim Mishabadim, automatically she's like a Malva that's coming to collect, that when it goes to a third party, we automatically require her, the lender, which in this case is the woman collecting the debt, to make a shvua. And same thing applies when she's collecting from the Yisayimim or when she's collecting when he's not there. It's all based on the same premise in the sense of because you're not going to the bar himself. The bar could have made that claim. He's not here, either because in the Chasim Shabbatim or the Yisayimim, or he's not here literally. And therefore, in all these cases, we do it. We are Anan Taninan, and we say, okay, you got to make an oath before you collect. Now the Mishnah explains these cases. Habegemes Ksubasa Ketsa. What is the case of a woman that downgrades her kesuba? What happened? And that which the Mishnah said that when she's coming to collect the rest, she has to make a shvua. So the Mishnah says, "Hey, kesubasa elav zuz." If let's say her kesuba that the husband promised, if she becomes widowed or if he divorces her, he's going to have to give her 1,000 zuz. The Amar lo hiskabat the kesuba sayach. He says, "I already paid up your whole kesuba." The Hirmesh, she says, "Lo hiskabalti elamon." It's not true. You didn't pay me the whole thing. You only gave me one mana, meaning 100 zuz. You only gave me a tenth of the ksuba. So that's considered pegemis. We already see something over here that it's not so, although there's a document of the ksuba that she's holding, we see that it's not so obvious that it's really owed because she's agreeing somewhat that it was paid up. So therefore she could only collect with an oath by swearing that it was only 100, not all 1,000 that was paid up. Moving on, the Mishnah explains, Eid echad me'ida shehi prua ketzad. What's the case of when one witness testifies that it was paid up? So the Mishnah explains. So his kusubasa elav zuz, if our kusuba was 1,000 zuz. Va'amalah eskebalti kusubasayach, and the husband says, I already paid up your whole kusuba. V'yayimer is like, it's a kabbalah. She says, no, you didn't pay me anything. V'eid echad me'ida shehi prua, and one witness testifies that it was paid up. So liti para elav b'shvua, so therefore, if she wants to collect the rest, meaning the whole thing, she could only collect with an oath. Continuing on. Menachasim Mishabadim Ketzah. What's the case? Again, that all the cases that we said that she has to make a shvur if she wants to collect the ksuba. What is the case when she's coming to collect from sold off properties? So the Mishnah explains. Macha Nechasim Lachem. If the husband sold from his estate to others, and now he has no money to pay her ksuba, V'hi nefras min alakuchas. Now she's going to collect her ksuba from those who purchased lands from her husband. Like difra ela b'shvur. She could only collect with an oath. The next case, Menichsi Yisem Ketzah, what's the case of when she's coming to collect from the estate of the orphans? Is Meis V'nich Nechasav L'Yisem, if the husband died and he left over properties for the orphans, V'hi Nefras M'Nisem, now she's coming to collect the ksuba from the orphans, L'Tifra El V'Shavu, she'd only collect with an oath. And finally, V'Shalib B'Fanav Ketzah, what's the case of when she's coming to collect when he's not there? Is Halach L'Medin Siyam, if he went overseas. And V'hi Nefras L'Bifan, now she's coming to collect her ksuba from her ex-husband who divorced her and he's not here. So again, in the phrase il b'shvur, she only collects with a shvur. Now, we continue on to Amud Beis, where the Mishnah continues and says, Reb Shimon Omer, he argues in Tanakama, which Gemara will explain exactly what is it that he's arguing about and what part of the Mishnah is he arguing on. But he says, Kol zman shi tevas ksubasa, as long as she's claiming her ksuba, hayoshin rashbi naisa, then the inheritors can make her take an oath. But if she's not claiming her ksuba, then the inheritors cannot make her take an oath. Now, regarding the last three halachas in our Mishnah, there were five cases that we said the woman has to take an oath to collect the ksuba. The last three we explained because essentially it's what's called anan taninan, which was when she comes to collect from the chasam shabadim, when she's coming to collect from the nechse isaimim, and shalei b'fanav, because he's not there, so we make the claim he could have made to make the creditor take an oath. But what's the reasoning of the first two halachas? So the Gemara explains, Sava Rami Bacham al-Mem, Rami Bacham thought to say that regarding the first case of pegemes ksubasa, that the reason why she has to take an oath is because it's shvur deiraisa, it's actually a biblical oath. Now, what's the difference if it's biblical or rabbinic? So Rashi explains actually that the reason is because by a rabbinic oath, if the one who has to make the oath says, I don't want to, let the other person take the oath, they have the rights to do that. Now, however, regarding a biblical oath, a person cannot do that. So therefore, there is a ramification. And that Rambam said that this halach of Begemes Kizubasa is actually, this that we make her take an oath is biblical. Why? Because of the following reason. What's the case of Pegemis? That there's a claim of 200 zuz. Now, however, she agrees to him regarding 100. He's saying all 200 is paid up. She's saying, no, only 100 was paid up. So the claim that he's making to her, she's agreeing to half of his claim. Yes, you're right, it was paid up, but only half was paid up. Now, we know the classic biblical halach of moed b'miktzas, when someone agrees to have to claim, you have to make a shvua. So therefore, he's saying that this halacha, pekemes ksubas, is actually a biblical halacha. On that amarava, he says, shtei tshuvas bedavar. There's two refutations of your interpretation. Chada, first of all, the chal nishbon shabat Torah, all biblical oaths are nishbon b'le mishalman, are when a person swears not to pay. In other words, someone that they're claiming him, that he is the defendant, and they want him to pay up, he's saying, I don't owe any money, he has to take the oath. As the Pasuk says, V'loka ha'ba'ala v'lo yishalm, it's about not paying. So the one that has to pay takes the oath. But v'hi nishbas v'nei talis, how could you compare that to the case of Begemes Ksubasa, where the oath that she's taking is to collect? We never find the biblical oath of collection. It's about not paying. Now, moreover, is that every document, the lien that it has, what it's coming to collect from, is on the karkois, on the nechasim shesh b'nachrayis, those properties of the person that the claim is against. Now, since that's the case, which that's what a ksuba is, it's a document, the problem to say that it's a biblical oath is einish boin al kafir shibit karkois. There's no biblical oath regarding a denial of an encumbering of property, as the Gemara explains in Sechta Shavuos and Perek Azov. Now, a kesuba is a denial of shibud karkois, because that's what a kesuba is against. And therefore, for two reasons, you can't say that this oath of a pegemes ksubasa is going to be biblical. So Elam Rava, rather Rava says, Midrabbanan. This oath is actually a rabbinic. Now, what's the reason for it? The reason for it is because, in general, the paradaic, someone that's paying up a debt, which in this case is the husband, he owed the ksuba, he's precise. You want to make sure you're paying it all up. The mifraloi daik, the one who's being paid up, is not so precise. Oh, you give him money, puts it in his pocket, and walks on. Which in that case, that's the woman who is having her ksuba paid up. Now, therefore, v'rama rabbanan shvu'ala, that's why the rabbis imposed an oath on the woman who is being paid up, meaning when she's coming to collect, we mandate an oath on her, kihechi detidik, so that when she gets paid up the first time, she should be precise. In other words, regarding a pegemis ksubasa, that she already got paid up, let's say it's 1,000 zuz, and she already got paid up 100. Now, he's claiming he paid up everything. She's saying, no, it was only a tenth. Now, we usually say that the one who paid up knows better. So we really should believe the husband. But the wife has the ksuba, so we believe her. But since they're not usually so meticulous, we say, just watch out. If you didn't collect the whole thing and you're coming to collect the rest, we're going to make you take an oath. Now, if she's telling the truth, she'll be comfortable taking an oath. But she'll only do that and feel comfortable if she's precise, and then we'll know that the truth is coming out. That's why we mandate a shvu'ah, to make sure that they're really making sure what it is that the husband paid up, which usually that the mifra, loy daik, the one who usually is getting paid up, is not so careful to make sure how much is being paid up. Now, Rashi points out, regarding what's discussed in Masechet Shvu'ah, that this halacha is even if he's not claiming her to make a shvu'ah. Because although generally there's always a claim, even without pagemsk subasa, that they could say, as we alluded to this on Ahmed Aleph, that you should make a shvu'ah if you're coming to collect, but that's only if the claim is made by the defendant. Here, it's even if the husband doesn't make the claim, still a pegemis ksubasa, as we just explained for rabbinic purpose, has to make a shvu'ah so that we know she's meticulous and she's really telling the truth. Now, Ibailu had the following question. Pegemis ksubasa be'edim. What would be the halacha regarding this topic of a pegemis ksubasa, which, as we explained before, it's that where she agrees that only part of it, but she's saying all of it wasn't paid up. What happens if it was done in front of witnesses? In other words, she says, you're right, part of the ksuba was paid up, and I actually received that part of it in front of witnesses. Maha, what would the halacha be in that case? As the Gemara explains the question. Im isa de para, if it was true that he paid up the whole ksuba, be'edim have a para law, he would have paid her the rest, all of it, in front of witnesses too. In other words, because from the fact that he was so diligent, and he made sure that witnesses were there by the first time he paid her up, which was just a month and not all of it. So therefore, if he really paid up the whole thing, then there would have been witnesses on the rest, and he doesn't have witnesses for the rest. And therefore, obviously, that she's right and she wouldn't have to make a shvua. Or maybe, it's not because he was careful to make sure that there were witnesses. It's from Uyis Ramile. It maybe just happened to have been witnesses there. He's paying her up. There were two people there, so they saw. But who said he was so careful about it? Maybe he paid up the rest, even without witnesses, and maybe she still has to make the shvua of Begemis Ksubasa. So the Gemara says, Tashma, let's bring a raya from the following brisa. The brisa says, Kol Neshbon Shabbat Torah. Any situation where there's a biblical oath, as we mentioned this halacha before, Ar Neshbon V'Lei Meshamen, it's the one that, who doesn't want to pay, who is the defendant, that's the person that makes the oath. But the brisa says, Ve'il Neshbon B'Naitlam. The following situations, that the oath is actually on the person that's coming to collect, and that the sages instituted in these situations that it should be different. And the reasoning for all these halachas are explained in Masechet Shvu'ah and Perikol Neshbon. But the cases are, Hasacher, someone that was a hired worker, where he says, give me my pay that you owe me for working. And he says, well, I paid you up already. So in that situation, it's actually the worker who's coming to collect, he takes the shvua. Another case is Vahanigzal, that if they see that somebody went to someone's house, so the person who's the homeowner says, give me my vessel that you stole, you took it. And he says, what are you talking about? I didn't take it. Now witnesses see that he's walking out, and there's obviously some vessels under his coat, but they don't know what it is. In that type of situation, the one who's claiming that he was stolen from, he makes a shvua and he collects from the suspected goslin. Another case is v'hanechbal, someone that was injured. In other words, if they see somebody walk into someone's house and his hand is whole, he comes out and he's injured, his hand is broken. So he says to that person, you injured me. And he says, what are you talking about? I didn't injure you. So again, that nechbel, the one who is injured, he makes the oath and he collects damages from the suspected damager. Another case is v'shekenegdei chasher al hashbua, when the one who, the defendant, is suspected regarding lying on oath anyway, so there's no purpose in making him make an oath, then the chacham has said, okay, then the one who's coming to collect will make the shbua. And v'chen v'nei alpin kasai, the storekeeper regarding his ledger. In other words, if he wrote all the people that owe him on credit, and he said that this person told me to pay his workers from my store, and I gave them, and the workers say that's not true, we didn't take anything, so then actually both of them, the storekeeper and the workers, swear to the homeowner, swear to the one who owes the worker, and now the store owned the money, and they collect from him. Because he says, I paid your workers. The workers said, no, we didn't get paid from the storekeeper. So they both go to him and say, you owe us money. They both swear and they collect. And finally, v'hapoigim shtori shalei be'edim. If a person downgraded his document without witnesses, meaning to say that the one who's coming with the document agrees that part of it was paid up, but there weren't witnesses there, then they have to make a shvu and they come to collect the rest. Now on that, the Gemara makes the following inference. Shaloi be'edim in, it sounds like that only if the pegimo was done, not in front of witnesses, that they agree that part of it was paid up, but no witnesses saw even that part being paid up. But the understanding is be'edim loi, that however, if it was done in front of witnesses, meaning that part that the person is agreeing was paid up, then it wouldn't be considered pegimus ksubasa, as the logic as we explained in the Gemara's question, because if it was paid up, then if the person was careful that the first part was paid up with witnesses, and the rest would have been also witnesses. And from the fact that they don't have witnesses, it's obviously that it wasn't paid up yet, and therefore it wouldn't mandate a shavua. So I think Gemara says, no, it's not a raya. Because actually, loy meboye kamar. The Bryce is actually saying a bigger chiddush, and that is as follows. Loy meboye be'edim, we didn't have to tell you that it's considered pegemis ksubasa, or in this case, a pegem of ishtar, that if there were no witnesses, that devadei tzricha shavua, of course, for sure there, the person has to make an oath on the rest. And the reason being is because this that the person is admitting that part of it, let's say a mana was paid up, that's not because of their truthfulness. It's because there were witnesses that were there that saw it was paid up. And hence it doesn't have what's called in halacha hashavas aveda. It wasn't someone that was out of their own goodwill returning it. Avashaloi be'edim, but if there were no witnesses, then we would have thought to say that it should be like someone on his own goodwill is returning a lost object that he found. And the reason being is because this person is holding a full-fledged document. If the person would have wanted to, they could have said, I never got anything from you, and then claimed to get the whole shtar, or in our case, the whole ksuba. And therefore, we would have thought to say, v'tishko b'loy shvua, that they could collect without a shvua, kamash mulan. That's the chiddush that the Brais is coming to say, that even ha'poigim shtar shaloy be'edim, where you would think to say that they didn't have to admit to part of it, but they are. So therefore, the rest should not have to require a shvua, because they could have been not even pegemis in the first place. And that the chiddush is that it is considered pegemis, and they have to make a shvua. But regarding edim, don't prove that in that type of situation you don't have to make a shvua, because actually, to the contrary, we could say that then, for sure you would have to make a shvua, because there you don't even have the havamin of saying that it's like a meshva vedon. So the Gemara didn't resolve that question. Now moving along, the Gemara says, Ibailu, with the following question. Ha-pegemes ksubas, a different variation. If a woman made a pegima in her ksuba, again, that she admitted that part of it was paid up, but she said not all of it, pachas pachas mishava puta, less than shava prutas, meaning the lowest denomination of currency. In other words, that regarding this mana, that this 100 zuz out of the 1,000 that she's agreeing that she received already, she makes such a precise calculation. She says, look, she pulls out this huge book and she says, on Monday you paid me that much, on Tuesday you paid me that much. And she combines all the calculations of even denominations of less than the shava pruta. So the question is, mahu, what would be the halacha in that case? Would she require an oath on the rest or not? As the Gemara explains the question. Do we say, look at her book. How could she be lying? Look how precise she is. So kushta ku'amra. So obviously she's saying the truth, and therefore she doesn't have to make a shvua. Maybe this is part of her trick, part of her game. She's making believe that Oh, and she writes all these different things and see how precise she was, but it's part of her sham, and therefore maybe she would still have to make a shvuah. So take or let it stand. It's not clear if that would still fit into the classic pagemis ksubas to require shvuah or not. Another variation, they said they had the following question. Pecheses ksubas samahu. What's the halacha if, let's say, her ksuba was, as it's written in the document in the ksuba, 1,000 zuz? Now he says, I paid you up all 1,000. And she says, no, you didn't pay me anything. But what I do agree to you is that you really only agreed to give me a ksuba of a mana. What's halacha in that type of situation? The Gemara explains this question. Do we say that's essentially the same thing as pagemis, where he's claiming he paid up all of it, and she's saying, no, you don't owe me all of it, I agree to that, but you owe me part of it. Now, not because you paid up part of it, you didn't pay me anything, but really, although it says 1,000, really we made up, you only owe me 100, so you at least give me 100. So is that like pagemis, where she's agreeing to part of it? Idilma, or maybe no. Pagemis moidje b'miktsas. The classic case of begemis is that she agrees that she received part of the payment already. But here she's not agreeing that she got paid any of it. She's just saying, you never really owed me in the first place. But since she's never agreeing to have admitted that she received anything in the first place, so then, as we said before, that doesn't apply the rabbinic reasoning of that she should be precise when she received, because she's saying she never received. So the Gemara says, Toshma, come in here, it says in the Braisa, Pecheses Tifarish Leibishpur. That actually, and that makes sense according to the logic we said before, that she could collect without a shvuah, because there's no reasoning of being precise. She never received in the first place anything. So Ketzel, what's this case? It's Haisik Subasa Elev Zuz. If the ksuba was written that he's going to give her 1,000 zuz. V'amar lo hiske bal t'ksuba sayach, and he says, you got your whole ksuba, I paid you up. V'yameres lo hiske bal t'ksuba, she says, no, you didn't give me anything. But, v'ein elamana, really you only owe me, the whole ksuba is really only a mana. So that, the Braisa says, Nefrash lebeshvur, she collects without a shvur. Not like the halacha begemis. Now, but on this halacha, the Gemara asks, but my gavya, with what is she collecting even the mana that she's agreeing, that she's downgrading how much the ksuba really is? Bahayshtara, with this ksuba itself? But hayshtara chas b'amahu, this document, this ksuba, is like a piece of paper. It's like a shard, because she's agreeing to him that it's forged. Because the ksuba says 1,000, and she's admitting that the ksuba really only was 100. So how could she even collect the mana? So now Amar Rabba Bered the Rabba, she's not saying that the document was forged. By Meris Amona Hoisli Beini LeBeinoi, she's saying the document is as it was. It was written and signed appropriately, and it was received in front of witnesses who agreed, and it was written by the Chasna. He's going to give 1,000 zuz. But he believed me, he trusted me, that I'm only going to claim from him a mana. We had this understanding that he had to do it for whatever reasons, for the in-laws. So he had to write 1,000. He actually was required to give 1,000. But he believed me, and I'm still going with that I was only going to collect 100 when the time comes. So on that is what she's saying. It's Pecheses. On that, the Bryce is saying that, okay, when she's coming to collect that, she doesn't have to make a shu. It's not like the halacha of Pegemis. Now, the Mishnah said, Eirechad mi'ida shipruah, which is the second of the 5 cases, which the Gemara is going to come to explain that too. As we said, we just explained the rabbinic reason of the first shvuah pegemis ksubasa. The last 3 we explained already in the Mishnah. But what's with the halacha of this second case? When one witness testifies that she was paid up already, and she says, no, I wasn't paid up, so when she comes to collect the ksuba, she has to make a shvuah. So, as in the previous discussion, thought to say that this is a biblical oath. Simply dichsev, like it says a pasuk in Devarim. The pasuk says, "Lo yokum eid echad be'ish." One witness cannot stand up against a man, l'chal avin u'l'chal chatas, regarding any liability or any sin. Where, if you want to make someone liable for something, you have to have 2 witnesses. Now, the inference of that is l'chal avin u'l'chal chatas who they nakam. It's only regarding requiring sins, making someone liable, that one witness will not work and you need 2 witnesses. Aval, kamhu l'shvu, but the inference, and this is the halacha, that, but regarding an oath, one person, one witness, is enough to mandate an oath. V'amamar, and as the master says, kamokam shashnai mechayv noisim mamon, wherever it is that 2 witnesses could make someone liable for monetary payment, echad mechayv shvu, then one witness will make that person regarding monetary law to have to make an oath, where if two people he would have had to pay. Now when there's one person, now when he wants to deny that one witness, he has to make an oath. So Rabbi Bachama thought to say that this is the halacha over here, where it's a monetary law, and the one witness is saying that you didn't, that you already got paid up. So the kamu b'shvur. So therefore, that's why biblically she has to make a shvur. And that, as in the previous discussion, Amar Rabbi says shtei trubas v'dava. There's two refutations of your opinion. Chada, first of all, l'chal nishban shabbat taira. Any biblical oath is nishban b'loy mishaman, is to swear not to have to pay. V'hi nishbaz v'noitelas. Here it's different, where she's swearing and taking. So obviously, it's not biblical. Moreover, as we explained on the top of the Amid, where there's no biblical oath on the denial of a lien, of an obligation of land, which is what a shtar and the ksuba is, and therefore can't be a biblical oath. Rather, Rava says, midraban, the requirement of the woman to take an oath when one witness testifies supporting the husband's claim that it was already paid up is rabbinic. And the reason for this is kedei lahafiz daita shel baal, is to appease the husband. And that is because he's all upset. I know I paid her. And look, and this person even agrees to me that I paid her. So for that reason, rabbinically, they mandated the woman to make a shvu and she's coming to collect the ksuba. However, biblically, there is no requirement on her because it doesn't fit the criterion of a biblical oath.